Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 311 on Friday, July 18th, 2014. Greetings from Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I have been rowing on the Charles River for several years, times when Darlene and I are here the second half of the year, and I've never capsized one of the club singles that I take out of the Cambridge Boat Club. That is until Monday. It's not clear what led to the mishap, but in an instant I was in the river, wondering how you climb back into a skinny little shell from water level. Luckily, a coach from one of the university crews spotted me and let me climb onto the stern of his launch, making it easy to get back into the shell. As he pulled away, he said, "There are YouTube videos on how to get back in your boat after flipping it. You might want to check them out." I have since done so, and I'll have a link in the show notes to a good one that will let you see just how tippy these gorgeous boats can be. Luckily, I didn't have to row across the pond for my interview this week with UK author Linda Grant, whom I reached by Skype in London for a chat about her recent Kindle single titled I Murdered My Library. In discussing the major downsizing of her physical library of books during a move, she had some intriguing insights about reading on a Kindle.
I did have this very, very eerie sense that instead of the Kindle, you know, interfering with my ability to read the book, it made it a much purer experience.
In news, the big story this week is Kindle Unlimited, Amazon's new all-you-can-read monthly subscription initiative. I will also consider whether or not Amazon might be talking to CBS about the purchase of the smallest of the big five publishers. For the tech tip, I'm going to explore the Kindle Paperwhite's perhaps often overlooked book navigation tools. I'm not sure if I'm going to have time for content suggestions that I receive from some of you, some excellent ones, but we'll see how we do on time. And if not this week, we'll hold them over for next week. First up in news, eagle-eyed listener Linda Hopkins was the first one to alert me to what turned out to be a premature promo for Kindle Unlimited. Linda's email arrived here in Boston at 4 a.m. on Wednesday, two full days before the official announcement. This was, as it turned out, an unusually bungled rollout by Amazon, and the links to the monthly ebook subscription offer were quickly pulled, but they lived on in cached internet pages that were circulated around the web Wednesday and yesterday, Thursday. In any event, today, Friday, the press release finally came out and Kindle Unlimited made its official debut on the Amazon.com landing page. It came with a video showing lots of different boats made from origami paper pages sailing across the sea, and it was accompanied by this audio.
There is a moment in every good book as a story unfolds or a hero rises. An adventure begins, or an idea takes hold. When you are reminded once more, this is why you love to read. Introducing Kindle Unlimited, the freedom to explore over 600,000 titles and thousands of audiobooks in the palm of your hand. Enjoy unlimited reading and unlimited listening on any device for just $9.99 a month. Your library just got a whole lot bigger. So try it free for 30 days and read on and on.
The first thing I want to say about Kindle Unlimited is that I hope everyone listening to this show will actually sign up for the free 30-day subscription just to try it out, preferably by clicking first on one of the Amazon ads that you'll find at thekindlechronicles.com. The reason I say this is not just to make a plug for Amazon Associates commissions to support the podcast, but what I hope is that many of you will try this new thing and let me know what your experience is. I think 30 days is a pretty good time to actually try it and see if it's useful, and of course you can cancel it before it costs you anything after that period. Reporters covering the story have mentioned the same headliner books that are available for unlimited reading, the Hunger Games books, Harry Potter, The Lord of the Rings, and others. But the real test of Kindle Unlimited's usefulness, I think, will be how many times you come across a book that you want to read that has a read for free button on it, placed just above the usual buy now with one click. That's what you'll see if you sign up for Kindle Unlimited. I have been telling my wife Darlene about the new program today, and she was pretty skeptical until she happened to be looking for a book on Amazon by John Dunning. That's a mystery writer who our friend Tom Atkinson in Casper, Wyoming, had heard about and was talking to Darlene about. Darlene said some of his books had that free book thing you were talking about, she told me at supper. Now, you won't see John Dunning mentioned in any of the news stories, but via word of mouth, the way most books are still discovered, Dunning's mysteries have made it to our kitchen table here in Cambridge, and I can try one out for free with my Kindle Unlimited subscription. The one that I chose was Looking for Ginger North, which would have cost $8.99 if I had purchased it for my Kindle library. It's published by Open Road Media in 2013, and it's the story of Wes Harrison, a troubled ex-cop haunted by his mother's suicide. It's now in my Kindle Fire HDX 7-inch, compliments of Kindle Unlimited. The big question I have about Kindle Unlimited, though, is how many books can one person read, even with an arsenal of Kindles and plenty of free time? I have subscribed to one of the Pioneer book subscription services, Oyster, for I think it's been almost a year, and I've paid $9.95 a month. That's 4 cents less than the Kindle Unlimited monthly charge. And that's given me the ability recently, as they've added books, to read any of more than 500,000 books. And those include titles by two of the big five publishers, HarperCollins and Simon & Schuster. At this point, the 600,000 books available at Kindle Unlimited contain no titles from the big five, but there are more books there than I can certainly read anytime soon. Because I read so much on my Kindle, and Oyster has until recently only had apps for iPad and iPhone, there is now one that works on the Kindle Fire. The only time that I've been reading Oyster books is a few minutes before bed sometimes on my iPhone. So I have probably paid $80 for the right to read, at this point, 21% of a book titled No Excuses, The Power of Self-Discipline by Brian Tracy, and 12% of a sassy and well-written rock and roll era memoir, I'm with the Band by Pamela Desbarres. Desbarres. As it turns out, the Brian Tracy book is available to me for free through Kindle Unlimited, but the Desbarres book is only available for Kindle purchase at a price of $9.49. It could conceivably get picked up by Kindle Unlimited, though, because it's published by Chicago Review Press, and that's not, that I'm aware of, an imprint of one of the big five. So I'm definitely not getting my money's worth from Oyster. Except what's odd is that I do get kind of a vague pleasure from knowing that I could read any of those 500,000 books because of my subscription. Part of the pleasure in the case of Oyster is the very snazzy design they have for their apps and the website at oysterbooks.com. And the books are arranged by cool categories like Endless Summer, Chillers and Cliffhangers, and Famous Weirdos. Each section has a snappy intro written by someone who sounds like a book lover that you'd just love to sit down and talk about books with. So even though I have read pathetically few actual pages of these Oyster books, I have enjoyed scanning all the possibilities, getting a kind of vicarious enjoyment from knowing that they are all, in some weird digital sense, mine, or books that I can download and read if I have time and I want to. Amazon's new section, Kindle Unlimited, has some promising design as well, but I think it's in no way as aesthetically pleasing as Oyster's is at this point. As I thought about the coming announcement earlier this week, I found myself hoping that Sarah Nelson and Amazon's very independent team of book editors would help me find the really good stuff to read among those 600,000 possibilities, most of whom appear to arrive mainly by way of Kindle Direct Publishing and Amazon Publishing. And that's not to disparage those sources of books, especially Amazon Publishing. It's really some top-notch books show up there. But it's, I think, just obviously a challenge to find what you're looking for in the embarrassment of riches that indie publishing is bringing to the fore. Sure enough, one of the promo boxes for Kindle Unlimited that I saw when I signed up today is labeled Editor's Picks, and I assume that these 19 titles were chosen by Sarah Nelson's team. It's a very fine list of books, starting with one that I bought for more than $25 on Kindle when it came out, Capital in the 21st Century by Thomas Piketty. That's published by Harvard Press, so that was one that was they were able to get signed up for Kindle Unlimited. Other titles include War Brides by Helen Bryan, Winter's Tale by Mark Halperin, Marathon Man, a novel by William Goldman, and others that I recognize or have already read. The problem is that's only 19 titles out of 600,000, so I hope that the Kindle editors team is hard at work expanding those selections and maybe organizing them with something like the flair evident at Oyster. The truth is, of course, I certainly don't need two of these monthly subscriptions, so I'm sure Oyster is on the way out, maybe once I finish reading those two books that I started. It reminds me of how I ended my Google Music monthly subscription when the free Prime Music came out from Amazon. Google Music had really a lot better selection, but Prime Music was good enough, and it always offers me good music to listen to on my computer or tablets. Kindle Unlimited is not part of Prime, of course, but it seems sort of easy to think about adding $9.99 a month to my Kindle habit, and I think I'll probably read more of the books I obtain this way than I have on Oyster, just because I'm one of those people Jeff Bezos calls a highly engaged Prime member. I hope Kindle Unlimited is available to you soon if you live outside the United States, but at launch it's a U.S.-only offering. It's also limited to 10 books downloaded at a time, and that's a big difference from Oyster, where you can download as many books as you want for as long as you want. At first, I thought this 10-book limit would be a real drawback for someone like myself who does a lot of highlighting and note-taking on my Kindle books that I'm reading, but I just checked with Mike, a Mayday tech, and he reported that when you return an annotated book that you've obtained through Kindle Unlimited, if you download it again, you will see all of your notes and highlights. That's pretty cool, and I think there's some of that same technology when you borrow a book from a public library through Kindle, and then you borrow it again or you purchase it again, the system is remembering those annotations, so Kindle Unlimited seems to be having that same ability. I still think it's a little less convenient to me that it would be if you really had an unlimited number of those Kindle Unlimited titles that you could add to your archive and keep indefinitely, or as long as you continue to pay the monthly fee. I think that'd be a little handier than having to sort of cycle them in and out 10 at a time. You can remove a Kindle Unlimited book from your computer at the Manage Your Content page or from your Kindle Fire or from a Paperwhite First Generation. I spent a long time on another Mayday session this afternoon and discovered that there is at this point not a way to return a Kindle Unlimited book via your Paperwhite Second Generation. So that's an odd problem that I'm sure will be fixed in a future software update in the not-too-distant future. There is an Audible benefit from Kindle Unlimited. It's pretty cool. If you sign up, you get 3 months free membership if you're not an Audible member. And if you are an Audible member, you get one free credit at Audible when you join Kindle Unlimited, and you receive two more during your first 2 months of paying the $9.99. That's worth about $14 or $15 a month at Audible. There are 2,000 Audible titles available in Kindle Unlimited, and that, of course, is something that is not available at Oyster. I haven't mentioned the other similar-sized book subscription provider, Scribd, because I did try that briefly, but then I let it go when it was obvious to me that Oyster was going to be the more engaging interface and book selection. If you sign up for the free month trial, I hope you will email me at podchronicles@gmail.com with your impressions about how valuable this new Amazon program is to you. It's going to be very interesting to hear from authors and smaller publishers on whether this program benefits them financially and in bringing them new readers. It's a big, bold Amazon-style innovation that arrived today, and I think we're going to be talking about it, I'm sure, for the coming months and maybe years. Or, you know, I suppose we could find out that people prefer to buy their Kindle books the old-fashioned way, adding them to their own personal library in the cloud. For me, it feels like just when you think you're a big-time early adopter, you find yourself resisting change, or at least I kind of do at this point. Part of me just can't get my 63-year-old mind around the idea of subscribing to books instead of still kind of owning them with licenses enabling us to access them digitally. That's what owning means these days on Kindle books. You're going to hear Linda Grant talk in an articulate manner about the disruption of moving from physical books to digital books, and now we're being invited to turn the wheel yet again with this subscription model. If I find this disorienting as a reader, I can't even imagine how it must appear to people trying to meet payroll at publishing companies, big and small. These are amazing and wonderful and baffling times for those of us who still love to read books. The second item I want to mention in news stems from comments made in Aspen, Colorado by the CEO of CBS, Les Moonves, at Fortune's Brainstorm Tech Conference. The interviewer asked Moonves how he would feel if Amazon treats Simon & Schuster, which is owned by CBS, the way Amazon is treating Hachette. And this is what the CBS CEO had to say.
We are negotiating with Amazon as we speak, so I don't want to get into too much detail about it. Obviously, Amazon has a very definitive point of view on what should be done in the publishing business. Those in the publishing world are not totally copacetic with it because they do control an awful lot of the, a very high percentage of those books. And it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch as we go down the future.
So that was a pretty big piece of news. But the question is, what did it really mean? Maybe it meant that Simon & Schuster has now joined Hachette in their time in the barrel with Amazon's negotiators over ebook prices. That was the consensus interpretation, except for kind of an odd blip at Good eReader announcing that talks were underway for Amazon to purchase Simon & Schuster. They walked that back a bit later in the day, but then the blogger savant Nate Hoffelder at the Digital Reader followed up with a bold post predicting that a Simon & Schuster acquisition would make a lot of sense and that it might well happen. Nate's blog post on July 15th was very intriguing, and he says that he has in the back of his mind a list of companies that Amazon might want to buy, and Simon & Schuster is on that list under the heading Major Trade Publisher. Nate wrote, "To put it simply, Simon & Schuster is the smallest of the big five, and there's no real connection between it and its parent company, not like there is for four other major U.S. trade publishers. With $800 million in revenue in 2013, Simon & Schuster is the smallest of the major U.S. trade publishers in terms of revenue. It is a wholly owned sub of CBS, a $15 billion a year company with operations mainly in the U.S. Assuming Amazon were in the market to buy a major trade publisher, S&S would be the easiest target." So this is all speculation, and Nate makes that clear that it's no more than that, but it is an intriguing possibility. I doubt that the CEO executive was referring to acquisition talks in that comment at Aspen, but you never know. And as with many important stories in this space, remember that you heard it first via the-digital-reader.com. For the tech tip, I want to pass along an epiphany that I had probably at about 3 a.m. sometime this week as I was reading my Kindle Paperwhite in bed for a while when I couldn't sleep. I was reading a book. It's an excellent novel. I'm enjoying. It's titled And the Mountains Echoed by Khalid Hosseini. And part of its appeal to me is the grand sweep of time and characters that it presents, centered mainly in Afghanistan. So I had picked the book up mid-chapter, and I found myself lost in a way that X-Ray didn't help, because it was the plot that I needed to roll back ways, not who a certain character was. To reorient myself, I used a feature that I praised to high heaven when the Paperwhite came out with it, called Page Flip. But truth be told, I haven't used Page Flip much since then in my daily reading. The way this works, if you have a book open on your Kindle Paperwhite, you tap along the top to bring up the menu bar, and that also brings up a place below the text of the page, where if you tap, you'll see a slightly smaller image of that page appear overlaid on the one that you were reading. And this page, within a page, is an attempt by Lab 126 engineers to replicate a physical book's nearly perfect ability to move around in, fanning pages. You kind of benefit from the odd wisdom and precision of fingers when you're trying to find a place in a book that you kind of know is there. Maybe you just remember it with your hands. So at the bottom of Page Flip, you have what look like fast forward and fast back buttons, and these will move you to the first page of the chapter you're in or the first page of the next chapter. What I did was I tried going back to the start of the chapter, but I still couldn't figure out what was going on. So then I tapped on the little triangle to the right of the page, and that moves me through the chapter page by page. And what I discovered was that if you tap the right triangle repeatedly, quickly, the page blurs as it changes. And that's almost like fanning the pages of a real book. My father, when he was reading paper books, he perfected what he called the Windburn treatment, which was fanning the pages so fast that he caught just a glimpse of each one to get a feel for a book's information. He didn't do that to books that he liked very much, and now he tends to read a lot more attentively on his basic Kindle and Kindle app for iPhone. But with this Page Flip Next Page button, you really can sort of do a Windburn treatment, and if you have remembered a paragraph or something almost tactile about a place in a book, you may find it by doing this repeated tapping on the Next Page button. The beauty of Page Flip is that you can do all this rifling through your book without ever losing your place. That original page just stays there in the background, and it's if you tap on the Page Flip page, you can move to the location that you're looking at on the small page. But the effect is, I think once you get accustomed to this navigation tool, you'll feel a lot more in control of where you are in your book. And if you want to go back or forward for that matter to increase your comprehension and enjoyment of what you're reading, you can do it easily. When you're done page flipping, you just tap on the big black X at the upper right corner of the page flip view, and you return to your reading. There are other navigation tools like bookmarks that have been improved over the generations of Kindle software and hardware, the go-to command at the top menu bar, and of course X-Ray, where you can navigate the bones of the book by character or search term. These tools are all powerful, but they don't really help you read digitally unless you experiment with them and get accustomed to them so that they become second nature, and you're not sort of afraid if you start zipping around in your book, you're never going to get back to the page that you started on. I'm not saying I'm there yet, but as a result of my 3 a.m. epiphany, I think I'm a little closer than I was last week. I would be interested in any tricks that you have made part of your Kindle reading, whether on e-ink Kindles or tablets or apps. You can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com. Linda Grant is an award-winning British novelist and journalist who lives in London after a move that resulted in a kind of a traumatic downsizing of her library of physical books. She's told that story in a lively Kindle single published 2 months ago titled I Murdered My Library. Grant has published 4 nonfiction books and 6 novels since 1993 to considerable literary acclaim. Her third novel, Still Here, was shortlisted for the prestigious Man Booker Prize in 2008. As you'll hear in the interview, her latest novel is not yet available for U.S. customers on Kindle, but the rest of her books are, and you'll find them at Amazon.com if you're a U.S. reader. If you're in the U.K., you often have to wait for Amazon products, but in this case, you will find Upstairs at the Party available in Kindle version at Amazon.uk.co. I didn't see a price listed for it when I searched at the UK website, but if you have a local address, you'll probably be able to see that as well as a buy button. When I searched, a green button greeted me when I came to the books page saying, Kindle titles for your country are not available at Amazon.co.uk. Please shop for Kindle titles at Amazon.com. I reached Linda Grant on Monday, July 14th, in a Skype landline connection between Cambridge, Mass. And London. I began by asking her how she came to write her Kindle single.
It was a sort of fortuitous set of circumstances. I was moving, and I'd lived in St. Ives for 19 years. I always knew that I would never be able to move while I was actually writing a book, right? That would be completely out of the question. So I finished the final edits in last September, and I put my flat on the market at the same time. So I had sort of, you know, some time ahead of me. So I wasn't writing anything. I wasn't writing anything major. I had friends who'd written Kindle singles and had had a very good experience with it. I hadn't kind of really thought about it. And it was really when I started to get into the question of what am I going to do with these books, that it occurred to me that it would be a very good subject for a Kindle single. So I actually started writing it in November, which was the time at which I was starting to dispose of the books. And then I finished writing it. Not that it took me that long, but I realized that I needed to sort of see it through to the very end, to the point at which I had moved and I'd got rid of the book. So it was really being written between about November and February.
And so you, when you finished it, you were in the new flat?
I was, yeah.
About how many books did you end up having to dispose of?
I didn't count them, but I know there were 3 carloads. When I say there were 3 carloads, they were everywhere. I mean, they were in every available space other than the driver's seat, and he had to do it in 3 trips.
So that's certainly hundreds, possibly thousands.
Yes.
When you submit a Kindle single, do you do it through the UK organization?
Yes, that's right, yeah. The UK editor is called Andrew Rosenheim, and I had been in touch with him. I wrote to him and asked him if he was interested, and he came back and said he was.
And then it is available at the U.S. Amazon store as well. It seems to be doing very well. It's number 2 in arts and entertainment. How would you characterize the sales of it so far?
It sold about 4,500, mainly in the U.K. store, because an extract from it appeared in the Guardian the week of publication. The extract was about 2,500 words, and the Kindle single is about 11,000. Mm-hmm. So it got a very good, you know, publicity boost, and I promoted it on Twitter quite heavily in the first week.
I also see you have a new novel out, Upstairs at the Party.
Yeah.
It's not available at the U.S. store in Kindle. Is that going to change, I hope,
I think
soon?
It is available in the U.S. store in Kindle, but I might be wrong. I don't know. It doesn't have, as yet, a U.S. publisher.
Oh, I see. Maybe that's the issue. Yeah, I just checked it this morning, and it says unavailable. And it's available at the U.K. store, but I can't buy it because I don't have a U.K. address. But
right.
But there's just, you certainly intend to have it on Kindle for the U.S., I suppose.
Well, I would hope so, yeah.
One thing that was fascinating to me was you talked about the first book you read on your Kindle was In a Strange Room.
Yes.
And you made this observation. You said, I had the peculiar sensation on my Kindle of mainlining directly into Galgut's brain without the intervening medium of the book's aesthetics.
Yeah.
Could you say more about that?
Yeah. I had heard really through my agent about, several years earlier about there being some kind of, handheld electronic device, right? And really, I've always thought that, that this made a huge amount of sense. And I was very interested in it as a concept. I was never a kind of Luddite about the Kindle. I mean, I have issues about Amazon as a sort of, monopoly supplier of e-books, but that's a separate question. So what happened was the Kindle launched in America, but it wasn't available in the UK. There was this earlier thing called the Sony Reader, and somebody had actually given me one, and I found the screen resolution extremely poor. I found it very, very difficult to read, and it was very, very clunky. You had to attach it to your computer. So I kind of given that up almost at once, really. And the Kindle launched in the US, but it wasn't available in the UK, and nobody had actually seen one, right? Nobody had laid hands on one. Nobody knew what they were like. And then they launched in the UK, I think it was around September of 2010, I think it was then, yeah. What happened was somebody had one and gave it to me, and I mean, I saw its obviousness immediately in terms of its lightness and portability and being able to change the font size, and so I went and bought one. So I was kind of pretty early adopter, fairly early, within about a month of their launch here, I bought one. What happened was I had an appointment at the BBC in the West End in London. I was a bit early for it, and I went and had a cup of coffee, and I was sitting reading this novel on my Kindle, and I thought, actually, this is a perfect medium for this particular book, which had a very pared-down writing style, right? And I did have this very, very eerie sense that instead of the Kindle, interfering with my ability to read the book, it made it a much purer experience. And because I'm a writer, I understand that this is how a writer writes. A writer, effectively, almost all writers now write on a screen. We write words on a screen. We don't write words on paper in a book. And I've never been as enamored of the kind of aesthetic and tactile experience of a book. I don't mean I'm not enamored of it. I mean, I am, but it's never had quite the significance to me of the words. The words to me have always been the most important thing.
And so why do you think the words seem to come across in a purer form on the Kindle versus a paper book?
Well, I think partly because of the lightness of it, partly because you only have, one set of words. You're not one set of words on the page. If you read a book, every book is a different book, right? It has a different number of pages. It has a different cover. It has different paper. It has a different type. But somehow, what happened when I read it on the Kindle was that every book became it like every other book. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can set the type size, I can set the font, and so all you're dealing with is words. That's all you're dealing with.
The only thing that's different are the words.
Yes, that's right. The only thing which is different are the words. And I quite like that. I mean, I must say, I read, paper books and Kindle books. I read both. I don't, I haven't given up reading paper books by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you still feel that difference when you switch from reading a book on Kindle versus on paper? Do you still experience that difference in kind of the purity of the encounter with the words?
Well, the funny thing is that for, not unexpectedly, for quite a while, the Kindle was a real, it was kind of a real novelty, and I was, reading most books on the Kindle. And then that sort of novelty kind of wore off, really, you know, as it does. And I went back to, you know, reading paper books. And the really strange thing is that after several months of mostly reading books on the Kindle, the aesthetics of the paper book came to seem a little more important to me.
Interesting.
What I find is that I think a lot of non-fiction books, particularly where there's footnotes, are very, very difficult to read on a Kindle, particularly ones where you need to kind of, you know, scroll back and forth. You want to kind of rifle through it. You want to look back at something. You want to look at an index, that kind of thing. Kindle's really not very satisfactory for that. For me, it's much better for fiction, much, much better for fiction, and particularly good for long fiction, you know, for when you don't want to be carrying around a really heavy book in your bag all day if you're traveling around on public transport. We do a lot in London.
Mm. Are you reading sort of half and half at this point?
It's very difficult for me to put a limited number on it. I think one of the things that happened was that before I moved, I was so completely overwhelmed by books that I didn't, you know, I just couldn't buy any more. You know, I just couldn't buy any more. And if any book came into the house, it was going to have to go out again. And then when I moved, you know, because I actually got rid of more books than I had shelf space for, I went a bit demented. So now, you know, I have got some empty shelves and I'm trying to fill them up again. So I'm buying books.
You have room to buy some more books, which is a pleasure.
So I have room for more books, yeah. So I'm sort of, you know, I'm buying books. I mean, one of the really, really infuriating things which happened, and I suspect this is going to happen more than once, is that I went looking for Philip Roth's Nemesis the other day, and because I wanted to reread it for a particular reason, and I couldn't lay hands on it anywhere, which means that it must have inadvertently gone. I mean, I never meant to give it away, but I think inadvertently I must have got rid of it. And there are other, you know, reference books that I haven't looked at for sort of, you know, 15 years. And, you know, you think, oh, I'm never going to need those again. And lo and behold, you think, oh, where was that book? Oh, no, you got rid of it.
It was in one of the three carloads.
Yes.
Well, one thing that you hear a lot about these days is how discovery is working in the age of digital books and how will people's books be found. And
yeah.
I was reading this Kindle single, and you mentioned Alberto Moravia is one of the Penguin authors that you clicked off. I was reading on a Kindle Fire, so I highlighted his name, and with five taps of my finger, I had purchased and was reading Agostino, which looks like a terrific book, you know. And when I think about, well, how do people discover books these days? I said, that's a good example of going straight from someone who you're interested in, mentioning an author, and with five taps of your finger,
Absolutely. You've
bought and purchased the book.
I think where you really see that is on Twitter.
Mm.
You know, I follow and I'm followed by a lot of writers on Twitter, but also a lot of readers, you know, very, very dedicated readers. And people are constantly mentioning books that they've read. And you think, oh, I don't know anything about that. You know, you just go straight into Amazon and then you bought it. You know, you bought it moments later.
Mm.
You know, and I get people saying, you know, I mentioned something and moments later somebody comes back with bought it. Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a whole different way of figuring out what you might read next.
Well, it is. I mean, I was in a small independent bookshop in Hampstead a week or so ago. And I actually went in there looking for something in particular, but they didn't have it, right? And, of course, that wouldn't happen, you know, if you were shopping online. They would have it. And I wound up buying something completely different, a book published, you know, a novel published 25 years ago that I'd simply never got around to reading. But I wouldn't have bought that if I was looking for it online because I would have found the book I wanted.
Yeah, that's right. So there's some serendipity that can only happen in those bookstores.
Yeah.
You mentioned Prospero's Books, neighborhood
Prospero's,
shop.
It
closed in 2010. And,
yeah.
Amazon tried to get something going. I don't think it's had much success yet here in the U.S., where an independent bookstore like that could arrange to sell Kindles, yeah. and then if
right.
people buy their Kindles there, each book they buy would benefit
right.
the bookstore.
Yeah.
And can you imagine that as something that if Prospero's had been able to have some kind of an arrangement with Amazon or other ebook sellers to do that? Mm-hmm. And
I mean, I think their problem was that it was where they were situated, there were very, very, very high rents.
Mm.
Really, really high rents, and they were not doing enough business to be able to meet the rents and the business rates. I worry enormously about, you know, I mean, I got a lot of flack from people saying, you know, why are you publishing this with Amazon, right? You know, I mean, just to deal with that, it's 11,000 words. It's too long for a newspaper article, and it's too short for a book,
right?
And, I mean, I like the Kindle single program. I think it's a very, very good one. And I think it, you know, it's done a great deal for, you know, particular kind of, you know, long-form writing, which isn't book length. So, you know, I think it's one of the real kind of pluses of the Amazon program. And as I say, a number of friends of mine have done very well, you know, with it and have sold, you know, sold lots of copies or have got things into print they wouldn't have got into print otherwise. I mean, I think that the problem is that it's to do with monopoly, right? Because now 50% of books sold in the US and the UK are from Amazon, and 70% of e-books are from Amazon. So, you know, it's more to do with, you know, monopoly and, you know, how the author, you know, how the author fares. And I don't want to see bookshops, you know, just become something which no longer exists, you know, in bricks and mortar form. I really don't want to see that.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned at one point bookstores as temples and places of worship.
Yeah.
Really have that identification with them from way back.
Yeah.
Well, let's finish up. I assume that I hope that there'll be a Kindle version of Upstairs at the Party coming out for us soon. What will people find in that novel when they have a chance to read it?
Well, this is a novel about a group of young people who meet at university in the early 1970s at a time of sort of revolutionary and sexual politics, and They you know, sort of events take place which will have a long-term effect on all of them. So it's a sort of, you know, campus novel, but one which stretches on into the future.
I have been speaking with novelist Linda Grant, author of a new Kindle single titled I Murdered My Library. Thanks very much, Linda.
Thank you very much.
In content, I want to thank those of you who have emailed me book recommendations. I'd like to pass one of them along now. Jackie Burhan suggested Out of the Flames, the remarkable story of a fearless scholar, a fatal heresy, and one of the rarest books in the world by Lawrence and Nancy Goldstone, available on Kindle for $9.99. Jackie wrote me an email about this book and included a quote about the character who's described in it, Aldus Manutius, writing that he changed the face of Western civilization even more profoundly than had Gutenberg. Aldine octavos were to the 16th century what personal computing was to the 20th. Suddenly, more information was available to an individual reader than had previously been available to most institutions. Ordinary citizens were now linked across Europe. They read what they wanted, which meant that they could think what they wanted. Most of all, they had the power that came from the knowledge that there were others who thought like them. It soon occurred to this new generation, as it has to another generation 500 years later, that you could send information out just as easily as you could take it in. Jackie wrote, to me, this book speaks to the power of books and technology to cause disruption and promulgate freedom. Another quote, what is a book? Paper, cardboard, vellum, calfskin, glue, ink, the embodiment of our ideas, the corporal representation of our souls. And she says, I might toss in or digital after corporal, but on the whole, it seems like a book you and or your listeners might enjoy. She found it at the AP Advanced Placement book buyback event at her son's school. It was one of the recommended summer reading books, not one that her son is picking out, but certainly a good one. Garrett Riley also recommended two books, both of which happen to be available for free as Kindle Unlimited titles. One is about the aftermath of an earthquake, the big one in L.A. That's The Walk by Lee Goldberg. And the other is Hidden by Catherine McKenzie. That's a domestic drama told in three voices of its main characters, a man killed in a car accident, his wife, and a co-worker. That's it for this week. I'm not sure who my guest is going to be next week, but I've reached out to Amazon for someone to talk with us more about Kindle Unlimited, so I hope that we'll have somebody intimately involved with that new initiative to bring us up to speed on it. The Fire Phone that I ordered is scheduled to arrive a week from today when we'll be in Ocean Park, Maine. I also might get a review copy a little earlier than that, which would give me a chance to talk about the Fire Phone next week, otherwise it'll be the week after because we've got a wedding scheduled up in Maine for my sister's son, Jesse, and his talented, beautiful partner, Arielle Kepler. They're going to be married Saturday. I'll need to be not staying up till midnight before that Saturday to work on it. This is Len Edgerly in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.